welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Joining me now, Dr. Richard Antoine White. Dr. White plays tuba with the New Mexico Philharmonic in Albuquerque. We're listening to Dr. White play right here. And he is a tenured associate professor of tuba and euphonium at the University of New Mexico, as well as the associate director of the university's marching band. As a tubist, that's what some folks call tuba players, he has performed in the great halls around the world. He is the first African-American to earn a doctorate of music in tuba studies. Dr. White is from Sandtown, Winchester, on Baltimore's west side. When he was a very young child in Sandtown, he experienced homelessness and extreme poverty. His extraordinary journey from that beginning on the streets of Sandtown to his status as an accomplished symphonic musician and professor is told in a new documentary. It's called R.A.W. Tuba, From Sandtown to Symphony. It's by a couple of Baltimore filmmakers, Darren Durlach and David Larson. Dr. Richard White joins me on the line from radio station KUMN in Albuquerque. Dr. White, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about your early childhood. Things started to turn around for you as you got a little older, but things were very rough going for you when you were a little kid, age 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I lived on the streets of Baltimore. I started out with my mom, who had her battles with alcoholism. That's how we became homeless. Every day was simply about finding food and having fun, if that makes any sense. And in Baltimore, they have these little gutterways where the water run through, and I would find quarters and nickels and get a dollar, enough to get, like, I think 3 chicken gizzards or chicken necks for a dollar. And I would eat that, and then I would store it under my tongue because I didn't know where my next meal would come from. And if I couldn't find enough change, I ate out of trash cans. Some days I was lucky enough to find my mom, and other days I wasn't. When I couldn't find her, I simply would find a tree, piece of cardboard, abandoned building, and sleep wherever I could. And some nights we were very fortunate when someone would let me sleep on their couch or, you know, things like that. But that was basically my childhood.
And, of course, as an adult now, you are a member of a symphony orchestra, the New Mexico Philharmonic in Albuquerque. I, in my former life, was a musician. I was a conductor. I used to conduct in the Santa Fe Symphony, with the Santa Fe Symphony many times. And many of the folks in that orchestra also play in yours as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful town, Albuquerque, and a great orchestra. And the odds of anybody getting a job in any symphony orchestra in the United States are really high. I mean, it's an extremely competitive universe. The auditions are stringent and difficult. But given the fact that you started where you started, the fact that you've made it to there is even all the more astounding. When did things start changing, and when did you get directed towards music as a something more than just an avocation?
Well, that's awesome that you recognize Santa Fe. I'm also principal tubist and tenured in Santa Fe Symphony as well.
Oh, great. Well, you and I have never worked together because the shows that I've done with Santa Fe haven't called for tuba, but so okay. Nothing personal.
That's really awesome. I repeated first grade in Baltimore. Things turned around with my adopted family, Richard Vivian McLean, in fourth grade. I was actually going to repeat fourth grade again at Cross Country Elementary School in Baltimore. They thought I was too big. My parents had the brilliant idea to take the trumpet away from me because I started on trumpet. And they simply said, if you want this trumpet back, you'll have to do better. I've never failed or had a failing grade since they took that trumpet. I really wanted it back.
Because you wanted to play. You had
yes.
The fire in the belly. Yeah.
Yes. And from there, I went to middle school. I was like Falstaff Middle School, number 18 trumpet. That was not working out for me. I looked up, saw a tuba in the back. It was just one with a sousaphone and like a Frankenstein chair, because at that age, you're not big enough to actually hold a sousaphone. And I said, I want to play that.
And you really took to it early on, but then on kind of a whim, it sounds like, you decided that for high school, you were going to go to the Baltimore School for the Arts. But what was your notion of what going to the Baltimore School for the Arts even meant when you were in the eighth grade thinking about that?
Zero. I'm 6'5", 300 pounds. I was supposed to be a football player and go to Carver Vocational Tech School to be a carpenter. I broke my hip playing football. Doctor said, you could play again, but you might not walk. I was like, I guess I better start practicing this tuba. I showed up at the Baltimore School for the Arts a day after audition. The music school director, Dr. Chris Ford, just happens to be there. In my bold voice, I simply said, "Hey, I came to audition." He said, "Really? Auditions were yesterday." And I said, "I'm here today, though."
So, as it turns out, yeah. Yeah.
So he said, "Okay, let's go upstairs." He was kind enough. He heard me audition. And he said, "Can you play this?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's this." And I pushed down the first valve. And he said, "But do you know what note that is?" And I said, "Yeah, it's this." Because I had learned to play tuba with, I hope people remember, it's called a cassette tape. And it says, "Dude, this is B flat. When you have mastered B, stop the tape. When you have mastered B flat, go on to C." Dude. So that's how I read music, by sounds.
So, yeah, you weren't into this whole reading the notes on the staff, the lines and spaces, that kind of stuff. So they really took a gander on you, didn't they? I mean, you know, because many of the other kids, and again, auditioning for the School for the Arts, they will listen to thousands of kids audition and take, you know, 100 or so. It's competitive, and I would imagine that most of those other kids did know at least how to read music because they'd been taking lessons in that vein for, you know, several years at that point.
I was extremely deficient. I had passion. I had heart. He talked to the rest of the brass faculty. I was admitted into the School for the Arts. They hear about 600 kids during the audition season for the music school, and out of that 600, they'll accept 35. The odds are similar to making it in a symphony as a tuba player. It's easier to get in the MBA than it is to get a professional symphony or tuba job. Today, at any orchestral audition, you'll have 180-plus tuba players vying for one spot.
Yeah, one job, indeed. One of the people that landed a spot in the Baltimore Symphony, David Federle, who was your teacher at Peabody. When you left the School for the Arts, you went to Peabody and continued your studies and then went on to get a doctorate. What does that mean to you to have achieved the highest academic ranking in tuba studies? And you're the first African-American person to do that.
David Federle and Daniel Perantoni mean the world to me, and Ed Goldstein, who started me on tuba. Throughout my life, it's been incredible that none of the institution or teachers have given up on me. I pursued a doctorate of music in Indiana University, not to be confused with a DMA, Doctorate in Musical Arts. The difference between one is more an academic PhD degree and one is performance. But when you go to a school like Indiana, there are no shortcuts. You do both. I was not really interested in finishing the doctorate. Orchestra job was my goal. I was on the subway in Baltimore City, and I was talking to my dad saying, "I got a job. I don't need a degree, a doctorate." And as I was getting off the train, a little kid pulled my coat and said, "Hey, mister, you gonna be a doctor?" And at that point, I went, "Oh, man, I gotta finish this."
And a doctor you are. That's right. Put it on the envelopes. Put it on the checks. That's you, man.
Yeah.
In the course of this movie, we also learn that you did get reunited with your brother, your half-brother, yes. and tell us about that relationship.
That's pretty intense. My mom passed away. My natural mom passed away of an asthma attack. And the last thing she told my brother before she died was to be like your brother. So
in other words, be like you.
Yes. I first met him. He would want video games, tennis. I would just buy them, but we had no relationship. And then one day, my uncle said, "You should probably talk to him." So I called William up, my half-brother. Well, not half-brother. To me, he's my brother. And I said, "Hey, I don't have anything against you, but I don't know you. I don't even know your last name." And he said, "I never thought about that. We don't know each other. Let's work on that." And since then, we started talking. And I wanted him to be a part of the movie. I walked into the studio. He's going to freestyle because he's a talented rapper. And the producer was like, "I need a boom, ba-doom, boom. And then while you beatbox." And I said, "Excuse me, I'm a classical musician. You got some staff paper or something back there?"
Yeah, did you write this down so I can play it? Yeah,
exactly. But it turns out it was a magical experience. I was able to beatbox what you heard at the beginning of this show and play multiphonics, which is beatboxing and singing at the same time and playing. And then William came in with an extraordinary vocal on rap, And when I'm so excited for people to see the movie and hear the soundtrack, because it's nothing. It's like nothing you've ever heard.
Yeah, and the scene where he freestyles the rap in the studio with you is really a terrific scene. What do you want people to take away from this movie? Is this the kind of thing that you know people say? See, you know, you just lift up yourself by your own bootstraps, and if this guy can do it, anybody can do it. Is that the message, or is there a different message? How do you see it?
I think like Martin Luther King says, it's nice to tell someone to lift themselves up by the bootstraps, but if they don't have boots or a strap, that's pretty hard to do. My message to the world is believe in the imagination. Imagining things is not BS, and be kind. I think 99% of our problems in the world will be solved if we were just kind to one another. Everyone doesn't need the same amount of help. So where I needed help 1 through 5, someone might need 1 through 10, but there's still promise and potential there. So let's use our imagination to achieve greatness, and let's be kind. Traveling to the moon is not about the $1 billion it costs. It's about imagining that we can do it and actually doing it.
And there were indeed some folks who were very kind to you along the way, and you've been very kind to your students at the University of New Mexico, and kind to us for taking the time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. It's great to meet you and great to talk to you, and I hope someday I come back to Santa Fe to conduct and that we'll do a tune that involves tuba.
I will talk to Maestro Guillermo Figueroa, and we will program some tuba next time you're in town.
There you go. Done. All right. Really appreciate it. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Richard White, he's an associate professor of tuba and euphonium at the University of New Mexico and the tubist with the New Mexico Philharmonic in Albuquerque. The documentary about his life is called RAW. Those are his initials, RAW Tuba. It will be screened on the 8th and 9th of February at his alma mater, the Baltimore School for the Arts. Dr. White will perform at those events and participate in a Q&A. Those events are sold out, but we've got a link to the trailer of the movie at WIPR.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a Super Bowl preview with the author Mark Hyman of George Washington University and Stan the Fan, Stan Charles of the PressBox Digital Network. We're going to talk about interesting dilemma facing the NFL. They can't find anybody to insure their players against serious injury, and that is a problem. We'll talk about that with Mark and Stan tomorrow. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick is going to review Company. That's at Baltimore's Still Point Theater. Lunch for midday today was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade, sweet, and savory pies and quiches. We've got more information on the web at dangerouspiesbalt.com. I'm Tom Hall. I appreciate your listening. Have a great day.
You are listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.